Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision Radio Show. Today is November 30th, 2016, 8 o'clock in the morning. Thank you for joining us. We have as our guest today, Jose Gonzalez, who is a retired therapist. I was introduced to him by Vince, another one of our hosts, and we kind of got into this conversation, and I thought I'd share it with you. It is really about social programming, social engineering. So thank you for joining us, Jose. I really appreciate your time. Oh, man, I think he just got cut off. Well, let me give him a call back. Hold on just one second. Let's do this again. Let's be persistent. So hang on. Here's the music. Do, 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 do. So we're calling Jose. He's in Texas. And he's probably going to try to call me. And I'm going to ignore him. And hold on just one second. Let's see if this will work. See if we can get him on the line and join him in with us here and see if this will work. Hopefully he'll pick up. So let's just be patient and see if we can get him on the line with us. The line cut off. Hey, so you cut off right as the show started.
One would consider that a sort of omen if one was ominous, right?
No, I think it's actually good. So now the next thing that I want to make sure is Jules can hear us. So I'm going to send her a little text. I think we're good to go. I think my Skype says that we're good to go. Because I did join you in. You know how I've had this issue joining people in? Maybe I fixed it. Yippee. So that would be a good thing. So, Jose, I just introduced you and the phone hung up. So welcome to the show. I really appreciate you spending your time here, your morning with us. Why don't you kind of tell us what we were talking about social engineering and the fact that we really do live in a white man's world. You and I were having this conversation about whiteness and the whole philosophy behind everything is through the paradigm of not just white people, but the European lens of the whole hierarchy of what happened in Europe. So why don't you introduce the concepts that you wanted to cover this morning?
Well, right. Well, in the first place, thanks for having me, Lonnie. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And now I'm speaking with you on the air. I know we have a UCY chat room and occasionally they manage to focus on the topic of discussion going on. On the radio show that's on the air, but
full confession on the chat room. I don't go there because I think the humor's too mean. I can't handle it. It's hard for me to shake it off.
I'll say this, and then we can discuss it later if you think
Yeah,
it's
we'll move
appropriate.
on.
There is a male sense, a maleness in the chat room, that is, kind of gruff. But we can discuss that
I
later
think
because it
it's
is
the
part of
tough guys. You've seen that movie, The Tough Guys. It's the tough guys' attitude, which I really refuse to participate in, which we can talk about later. But.
But we're going to touch on that later because we have to. It's part of the
Right.
socialization of our society, Anyway, but I do want to express, first of all, that whatever I say is my opinion, and far be it from me to try to convince anyone that I am an expert on
Right.
any topic. And that does seem to be a part of the problem in our society. The fact that we think we are very scientific, right? Because we've seen the history, we've seen what the church has done to how people, thought, we basically wanted somebody to tell us what to do and how to be because we wanted to be good, wanted to please people. And we saw all the problems that were created by that sort of thinking. So then science came along and we're like, yes, we're going to be scientific. And basically, we just traded a priest's robe for what are they called? A smock, a scientist's smock.
Yeah.
Now we're believing in blind faith what this guy with a white smock is telling us,
It's the
right? A lab
scientific
coat.
priesthood, really. The nuclear industry actually calls themselves the nuclear priesthood. They literally have deemed themselves the nuclear priesthood.
And it's so in your face, right? Because very few people will actually even grasp what that means because they say something and we're expected to believe it. And the fact, even now, what I'm saying, people are like, yeah, Jose is right. And they shouldn't say that. They should be like, what? Is this
Right.
true? I need to do my own research. I need to do my own research and find out. But these are my opinions. Of course, I can have nothing above an opinion. It may be a learned or an educated opinion, but it's still based on my experiences and my research. So before people start, hating and because this is a very emotional topic that we're about to discuss.
It's very true.
And the fact that the things that I'm going to say will upset a lot of people is indicative of the level of emotion that is involved here. We wanted to talk about social engineering, and I think I posted on my Facebook that we were going to discuss racism in the shadow of Donald Trump.
Right.
Okay, in the looming shadow. It seems that everybody's blaming all racist acts, all prejudice occurrences that are happening in society now on the fact that Donald Trump won the presidency. We can't believe that Donald Trump was actually elected, even though he didn't win the popular vote. We're not going to get into that kind of politics thing. The idea that a couple of years ago, Donald Trump kind of, threw his hat in the ring, and I said, you know what, I'm not even going to pay attention. I refuse to comment on any posts about Donald Trump. I refuse to even like or react to it because I'm not going to take this guy seriously because he's obviously just, out there. He's a
A
performer.
narcissist. He's a narcissist. I mean, the reality is that's what you do with a narcissist is you go gray. You give them no response at all. That's the best way to deal with a narcissist.
Right. Well, good. That's a good point. And then he won.
Right.
Right. And I'm like, holy moly. And of course, the signal that, okay, here's the kind of the catch-22. I'm going to use the term America for the United States because that's what people in America think they are, right? When in reality, everybody from the North Pole to the South Pole is an American on this
Right.
continent, on two continents. But anyway, for the sake of understanding and uniformity, I'll call us Americans. Americans have said, oh my, well, oh, let me change that. Americans have said, OMG, how can America have elected this guy as president? Okay, now, the oxymoron or the catch-22 here is, how can America be saying that when it was America that elected this guy, right? You know, so are we saying that the majority, because this is a minority president, the majority saying, how can we have elected it, when all presidents have actually been a minority? And if you go back 8 years ago, America was saying the same thing. Oh my, OMG, how could we have elected a black president?
I was happy to have anybody but Bush, to be honest.
Yeah. That did tend to be the thing. But we get into this socialization where we think we're forced to be like everybody else. And it's so in your face that people fail to realize that you grow up, fall in love, get married, have children, and then send those children off to an indoctrination facility, to where all children are taught to think alike. We're even taught to think that we have a choice in these United States when it comes to politics. And the reality is, as this last election kind of demonstrated, Democrats and Republicans are just two sides of the same party.
That's right. And Republicrats, that's what I call them, Republicrats.
Right, exactly. There's actually a few politicians out there that call themselves that.
Really?
And it's very, yeah.
I say Republicrats with rats being the operative part of the word. I would not be proud to be called a Republicrat.
Well, there you go. There, you know, so some guys who think, hey, look, you know, I figured this out, so I'm not going to call myself a Democrat or a Republican. I'm going to call myself a Republican. But he's actually gotten some votes. He went out there saying, let's be honest, Republicans and Democrats are the same. So he's saying everything that we believe, some of us believe. I think we're in a minority, really. As a matter of fact, he's saying what we see, and that's the point. That in our indoctrination, we tend to think, well, this is the way it has always been, so this is the way it should always be.
Or it always will be. No matter what you do, it's going to just, it's this whole indoctrination about the European, the whole attitude on the subliminal level about we have to bow down to certain norms, quote, norms. Because if you don't do those norms, then you're outside the realm of being normal. And that's just bad for society. That's kind of how we're trained.
The whole basis of any topic that we discuss is flawed because everything that we discuss, and any topic that we discuss, usually the topic is flawed because it assumes a static existence, whereas you cannot possibly have anything stay the same if you live in a world that is spinning, tumbling through space, or you know, whatever you believe, whether you're of the flat Earth society or the round Earth people, you know, believers. You know, the Earth is moving. We're constantly having earthquakes and storms and tsunamis and seasons. How can anything stay the same on a planet that is constantly changing? Now, so the error in our ways is to think that this is the way it has always been, therefore it should always be this way. That's the error in our thinking. And we're unfortunately, we grew up and our parents think that way, and we think that way because of our parents. Even though some people think, you know, when you're a teenager, you become rebellious and you don't want to be your parents, so you end up growing up and you end up being your parents, unless you take an active role in changing. And this is wherein the main problem of race relations or racism or white supremacy comes. The Europeans, I'm going to stay away from my description of the Europeans that invaded these lands, you know, because of, that really rocks the boat. But you know, they didn't come here seeking a better life. They came in here seeking, for the most part, the promise of fortune. Not necessarily fortune and fame, but fortune. They heard there was free land, right? And
that's
gold
right.
Gold everywhere.
That's, you know, there was, exactly there was, right.
The streets were paved with gold, and for the most part, you know, they were probably right, because the natives, the indigenous cultures that lived here, the tribes, were a part of the land and did not see themselves as owners of the land, although they did protect their interests in the communities by, you know, drawing an imaginary line in the dirt and saying, hey, if you cross this line, I feel like you're threatening me, and we will attack you. You know, that kind of stuff went on for the sake of protection of the tribe. But, you know, the Europeans came over and just pretty much said, oh, so you guys think you're part of the land. Okay, fine. Now I own you and the land. So they considered themselves better than these people. And I do want to say, as I told you earlier, the last time we spoke, that I personally believe that racism is actually on a downtrend. We've all been through you know, the indoctrination facilities. We've all gone and we've all been, you know, taught that racism is bad and being prejudiced is bad. So I really believe that racism is down, in spite of the fact that Donald Trump was elected.
Well, crimes are definitely up. Hate crimes gone up, but racism, I think I agree with you. I actually believe that the people who have perpetrated these hate crimes, they have used Donald Trump's election as an excuse. They, like the guy who harassed my daughter, he walked behind her and followed her to her car, right? And he felt empowered by Trump's election to make some frightening remarks to my daughter. And I think that is the issue that needs, and I actually think that President-elect Trump could actually be more forceful in that telling. I mean, look, the statistics are up. I mean, it's just in the last year, and I think that his whole campaign fueled the fire of the increase in racism. In the United States, since 14 to 15, hate crimes against Black or African Americans went up by 52%, to 18% higher on white people. Hispanics, 9.4, you know, and then smaller amounts on Native Americans, multiple race groups, et cetera. But I think his incendiary remarks throughout the campaign fueled that fire, and I think that it has worked for them. That's why they don't say anything.
Well, true. Now, but I will play the devil's advocate here. Did Donald Trump motivate the behavior on the part of the offenders, or did Donald Trump motivators the behavior on the part of the victims? Because as a Mexicano myself, and I'm talking about, I'm a Mexicano culturally, I'm not from the country of Mexico, but I am very Mexicano. And if you've ever seen a picture of me, I have been accused of being hardcore Mexicano, right?
Tejano. Call it Tejano.
Okay. As a Mexicano myself, I can tell you right now that if I go out my front door and engage in society for 1 hour, I can give you 6 examples of people being prejudiced against me.
Wow.
But I don't report it. Why bother? I've lived with this all my life. That's just the way it is. Why rock the boat?
Excuse me, but are those like crimes? Are they like hate crimes where people destroy your stuff or be violent towards you?
It can be that high. I have had those experiences, but for the most part, it's little things like little things like if I go up to a door at a business at the same time that a white man, or God forbid, a white woman goes up to the door at the same time, and it looks as though I'm going to try to make it through the door before they do, I get that elbow, right?
To sort of
keep me from going. Now, and I'm like, you know what? This happens all the time. No big deal. And this is South Texas. And in South Texas, I will tell you that the average white person in South Texas is more Mexicano than the average Mexican from Mexico that lives in Utah or Pennsylvania, you know? Mm-hmm. So
Eugene, Oregon. I get you.
Yeah, see? And anyway, it reminds me of something I heard, I think Paul Harvey radio show back in the 80s or something, where he said, you know, in the North, white people let black people get uppity as long as they live in the same neighborhood. And in the South, white people let black people live in the same neighborhood as long as they don't get uppity.
That's whole prism of you know, measuring people by whiteness, how you fit in society. It's that immediate connection, and there really is an advantage. I mean, there is, you know, I had a client of mine who called me up, and he said something to me about, well, that's never happened to me. And I said, well, look, that's because you're a white male. I said, on top of that, you're tall. Tall people have an advantage in this culture too. So there's
literally you can say they see things from a different perspective, because it's a lot different when you're looking down on people figuratively and physically. Now, what you talk about whiteness, a lot of people don't understand. They fail to understand exactly what is whiteness. And stop accusing me of whiteness when I don't even know what. How could I possibly be whiteness if I don't even know what it is? Well, the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago did a study, and they found that, I think it was like, don't quote me on the details, and of course I already gave you the citation so you guys can research it on your own. I think they found that something like 20% of Americans identify themselves as racists, right? Don't quote me on that, but you know the numbers are low and getting lower, because we've been indoctrinated. We've gone to schools and we've learned that being racist is wrong, and we've learned, you know, lesser and lesser, you know, what the true story was of slavery, and even more so, white folks probably don't even realize that Mexicanos at one time were slaves. You know, they just consider Mexicanos these poor people that want to come in and take our jobs, you know, but they don't realize that we were slaves at one point. But anyway, whereas about 20% of Americans admit that they are racist, about 57% of non-blacks rated blacks as less intelligent, right? Mm. And worse yet, 30% of blacks rated themselves as less intelligent than whites. You know,
wow. 62% themselves.
Yeah, and this is part of the whole self-hatred thing that is going on with groups like the Mexica movement, and that's a whole other topic that we can discuss where the Mexica movement has identified the fact that white supremacists have managed to instill a sense of self-hatred in minorities, especially the Mexicanos. Whereas, you know, we think the Barbie doll is the model for beauty, and when you make that Barbie doll, you know, darker skinned, kids actually think the Barbie doll is less beautiful than the white Barbie doll.
Even black children and Hispanic children, they want white dolls.
Right, because we're indoctrinated with this ideal that this is how. This is what beauty is. This is what intelligence is. I mentioned to you before, where, you know, I grew up, my babysitter was the drive-in theater, movie theater, right? I watched a lot of movies. I was so thrilled when somebody with dark eyebrows and an accent would come onto the movie, because I thought, wow, finally a Mexicano's in the movie, right? And you know, we didn't grow up thinking that in my family. I actually had, we were a mixed culture family because my mother divorced my father, and then I had two stepsisters whose last name was a gringon surname, right? One of my sister's nicknames was actually Gringa, right? We called her Gringa because she was so white. But when I got stationed in Panama with the U.S. Army, my little sister, the Gringa, wrote me a letter and said, "How are your kids getting along with all the other Mexicanos in Panama?" Because we thought the whole world was Mexicanos, right? Not realizing that there was a distinction between Panamanians and Puerto
Ricans. Huge divide,
and
so on. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And anyway, but you know, we don't think we're prejudiced. We do have a whiteness in us, in that we think that we have been indoctrinated into believing that whites are superior. And even worse is, there are other studies that have determined that a big majority, and I won't even quote a number, but a bigger majority of white people have a sense of fear when they encounter a non-white person, specifically a person of African descent, mm-hmm. or a black person. And
I was taught to be afraid of black people as a child. I had to unlearn that. To be honest, my father told me to stay away from any, even the black women are harmful. That's what he said. I mean, I was, you know, I must have been in second grade. I don't know how old you are when you're in second grade. But there, we lived in a community that was 100% Caucasian. On the other side of the other little town, La Puente, was where all the Mexicans were. Our little town of Hacienda Heights had no people of color. One family moved in that were black, and my dad had a fit. In fact, the community had a fit and tried to get them shuffled out. And of course, they couldn't. And we were told, like, don't even talk to them. Don't talk to their mom, because who knows what they'll do to you. That's a super toxic thing to say to little kids.
When my mother and stepfather signed a contract with the biggest local realtor in town to buy the house in which I grew up in, the other neighbors signed a petition, and this, you know, went door to door, signed a petition demanding that the realtor not sell the house to my stepfather and mother because she was Mexican.
Oh. Right. We've come a long way from that, though. I don't think that we're in that state of mind anymore. I think we are transitioning out of that. But the baseline of what we think is right and normal is still on the baseline of whiteness. This is why, right. I don't know.
Well, I think you're mistaken, Lonnie. And it may be because you're white, but I won't accuse you. But I think you're mistaken, because only because you said state of mind, right? Now, in our hearts, studies show, and I believe, in our hearts, we are not in that state of heart.
Okay.
But studies show that we are in that state of mind. Whereas the people that petitioned against selling the house to my mother because she was Mexicana, I will bet they truly believed they were not prejudiced. They had logical reasons for wanting to keep Mexicanos out of the neighborhood, right? And in their mind, those reasons made sense. Probably something in the neighborhood of diminishing property values. What ended up happening was the realtor sold the house to my mother and stepfather because of his surname. And I will tell you right now, if you knew my stepfather, he looked like a gringo. Well, he looks like a gringo. He's still alive. But he is more Mexicano than anybody I know. His mom was Mexicana, right? So he took on the cultural characteristics of his mom as opposed to his father. Now, the realtor sold us the house and then voided all the contracts of everybody else who had bought a house in the neighborhood and moved them into a better house somewhere in the less Mexicano neighborhood. You know, in other words, to the northeast side. He gave them better deals. And so more Mexicanos did buy, you know, homes where we in the street we lived. And
you know what's odd about that, Jose? All of that is that where we see this happening, like, you know, where the realtors actually can control how the city's built. But again, they're acting on an unconscious. They're not consciously saying, I'm going to be prejudiced against people. It's not that I mean, I think they just look at the value. They, in their heart of hearts, believe, there goes the neighborhood. You know what I mean? It's that attitude of there goes the neighborhood. And that spills out everywhere in our culture. And, you know, when you're on the side of the receiving side of social grace, like when you're the recipient of those extra, like Mike, that's why I brought my client up. He was like, well, what are you talking about? I don't get extra privileges. Yes, you do. You get lots of extra privileges. White male privilege is very, very, very real. And frankly, the fact that we can elect a person who says he grabs women by the private parts speaks volumes to the misogyny in this country. How anybody could ignore that when you're caught publicly on tape and still elect that person, to me, spoke volumes about how this country really does not care about women at all.
And look at the times that somebody like Jesse Jackson has ever been caught on tape saying something remotely similar to that. Right? Jesse Jackson, we were being set up. We were on track to seeing Jesse Jackson as being the first black president of the United States of America. But what happened? He was not quite enough. And of course, they only let you in their club if you play by their rules. And look at Obama. Yes, we have. Point number one, I don't think the United States was ready to elect a black president. And this last election is evidence of that. But we did get a black president.
Well, isn't this the interesting thing, though? Let's just stop there. I personally don't think he is a black president. He was raised by white people. He's not, his culture and ethnic identity is not black. He's only black because when people look at, like he said, hey, look, if you think racism isn't real, before I became a presidential candidate, I couldn't get a cab in New York City, even as a senator, a standing senator. So this is kind of my thing, though, about this whole thing. He's this one drop of black. I mean, this speaks to the whole conversation of whiteness, the one drop rule. If you have, you've tainted the pool, if you have one drop of black in your body, and you now a black person, even though your DNA is 50-50. Like my nephew, I get very offended. I have a nephew who's, my sister married a very dark man, and her children are kind of a chocolate color, right? But they were raised by their white mother, like totally had no connection with their black culture at all. And he is deemed, and I said to him, you know, why can't you just start reclaiming your ethnicity and say, you know, create a word or whatever it is. I mean, you're just as white as you are black. Why are you automatically deemed black? I thought, as his aunt, I'm offended by that. Like the whole fact that they want to put him in that box of, as if being black is a negative thing. I mean, this is where the conversation is just, we never get past this, that one drop rule.
Right. And you know, you interrupted me, but you made my point precisely when I said they only let you in if you play by their rules. And I don't think anyone out there, regardless of their level of whiteness, or blackness, if there's such a word, can tell me three things that President Obama has accomplished in the last 8 years that would demonstrate that he was a black president. You know, he basically was just status quo, except for the fact that his pigmentation was different. He has been just like every other president that we have had. You know, he bombed
pretty much.
He deported Mexicanos. He, you know, his taxation record. But anyway, to make the point that you made, to further the point that you made, Colin Powell, General Colin Powell, was being considered as a candidate for presidency. You know, way back in the day, it wasn't that far back, and he was interviewed, and in the interview he was asked, you know, how do you feel about possibly being the first black president of the United States? And Colin Powell said, quote, the thing about me is I'm not really all that black, unquote. Right?
Wow.
Because he was raised in a white environment. He made it to general, for crying out loud. How many black generals do you see?
Right.
You know, and that's the whole point, that regardless, at that level, regardless of what the color of your skin is, you have to have a certain level of whiteness to even be accepted into the club. You know, and personally, you know, to speak of politics, and it's still related, I hate to get into the politics, but it's still related to the whiteness. I think Obama was assigned as president because the powers that be wanted him to take the blame for everything that was going to happen in the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to happen anyway, regardless of who was president. They just didn't know that it was going to take more than two terms to happen. And even, it's still a safe bet, because if the economy crashes, and the U.S. dollar is going to crash, they were hoping it would have crashed during Obama's administration, so that the white Republicans could come in and say, look, see what happens when you elect a black man, or see what happens when you elect a woman, or see what happens when you elect a millionaire. You know, so it's still a safe bet, because now Donald Trump is going to take the blame.
I actually think that's part of the issue, too, with Donald Trump. I mean, I fully support the recount, because I think there was some election fraud where, I mean, Greg Palast has this movie, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. He and his team literally identified that if you are black in this country, you have a 900% chance that your vote will not get counted because of caging. They disallowed a bunch of Hispanic voters because they had, you know, two of the first name, last name, the middle name was different. So they said, oh, well, they're going to be the same person, even though they're living in different states. Both those people are off the voter rolls now. And that is with
what chance do you think I had? My name is Jose Gonzalez. Jeez.
Right.
There's like 7 million of us in the United States. You know.
Did you check your vote to see if it was registered?
I did. I refused to vote. I was going to vote for Jill Stein, but I said, you know what? What's the point? I didn't see that Jill Stein was even going to get the 5% that she needed. And I said, here locally, you know, whenever I would go out to the grocery store or the gas station and stuff like this, you know, I would mention Jill Stein, and people were like, who's she?
Right?
And I'm like, wow, people don't even know who's running for president, you know?
I think, demographically, because really here in Oregon, she was very popular. Texas, I don't imagine she's very popular at all. And again, I think that has to do with the racism. I think there's a whole different attitude about women. Like in Texas, women do, I mean, the whole idea, it's, what do you think of this, Jose? We didn't get into this the last few times we've talked, but the whole interlocking of misogyny and whiteism, I mean, they kind of go hand in hand. Right? We're talking about white males. Females are on the lower.
Because that is the way it has always been. And remember, Lonnie, I'm a pastor, right? I'm a pastor, but I call myself an omni-religion, omni-faith. I do not have a faith that I will impose upon you. I go to your home and I ask you, what do you believe? Okay, good. Tell me about this. You know, how does this belief help you to get through? Your life? And I will encourage you to find peace through how you believe, right? Mm-hmm. And I have yet to figure out why any woman has any religion whatsoever.
Amen to that.
Every religion known to man, and or known to me, let me put it this way, considers women a second-class citizen. You know, God, the Bible says, you know, God created man. Oh, by the way, man was lonely, so he, you know, created one of these things, too, for him to have fun with. You know, what are we going to call it? Well, we'll call it a woe man. He was a male. She's a female. Those are afterthoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, afterthoughts.
I like this.
You know what's interesting about that is I actually, for quite a while, I was studying Eastern philosophy, and I read this book by a Buddhist monk, a woman Buddhist monk. She's an American. She went to Tibet to go free her soul, and she joined an ashram over there. And she was like, oh, finally, I get to be in a religion where things are more equal. She was dumbfounded to find that when she arrived, the women had to sleep. The men slept inside the house on the beds. The women slept outside on the porch.
Yeah, and that's where they deserve to sleep if they subscribe to that religion.
That was kind of the message, you know. But it was really shocking because a lot of Western women will turn to Eastern philosophy because it seems more fair. But it's such a deep, and even women themselves hold themselves back. I mean, this is where the whole idea of social programming of what makes a person believe that they have value or not believe they have value. It's such a deep unconscious thing.
Now, in the Mexica movement, by the way, Mexica is spelled M-E-X-I-C-A, like Mexico, but uh-huh. In the Nahuatl language, the X is pronounced with an S-H sound. We have found, you know, through historical documents, that the women were revered. Not only were they equal and participated in every aspect of society and family and community, but women were so revered that if a woman were to die in childbirth, guards had to be placed around her tomb or her grave, because soldiers would try to steal a body part from the grave because it was considered honorable to have a piece of this woman that died in the most honorable way that anyone could die, given in producing life. You know, that sounds kind of gross, right? It sounds kind of gross that people are gonna, you know, if you died during childbirth, soldiers are gonna go there and hack a piece of your finger or a piece of your arm to carry it with them into battle. But that's how revered women were. Now the society recognized the limitations, the physical limitations of women. Men are physically stronger, so they did the physically stronger things. But it was not because women were incapable of doing it. It was because it made more sense for the strong person to carry the heavy load, right? And of course, women had the breasts, so they had to feed the babies. But that didn't make them lesser of a human being. And of course, the white Europeans invaded the land and saw what was going on and quickly proceeded.
Erased all that, yeah.
Yeah, they just dismantled everything. They burned documents. Everything that you hear, propagandists. Now, you're the one that brought up the topic of Bernays in
yes.
our discussion.
Edward Bernays. He actually did a lot of social engineering, intentional social engineering programs to change society. He was hired, I guess, what, 1919, 1920, when they had the radio. That's when they realized, when they saw the influence of the radio, they dug in deep. They're like, oh my God, we could actually change how
people
think. Right.
And then television came in, and they continued. Bernays actually did an interview. I forget who it was with, Johnny Carson, or maybe the guy who did the Tonight Show before Johnny Carson. And you know, he was asked, you know, what does that mean, what you do? And he says, it just means that I put a doctor in front of my name, and you're more inclined to believe what I say.
Exactly.
right. And anyway, well, he, Bernays came in and said, you know, we can program society to do what we feel is necessary, but it was not done for the sake of power. It was done for the sake of profit.
Right.
And that has been the leading cause of the European movement. Okay, mm-hmm. they invaded this land not because they wanted to be more powerful, but because they wanted gold and property.
Right. Well,
that's commercial.
It's true.
That's money.
Well, in North America, they took the land and their assets, but in South America, they pretty much, you know, they basically took all their assets and sent it to Europe. So, and they destroyed. Like, I know that here in North America, the whole thing about equality between genders, that was one of the things that the Native Americans, the people who lived here, their societies, they really were much more egalitarian in most of their cultures. There wasn't this hierarchy. A lot of times, all these different tribes had different roles, but as a general whole, women had the same value in society as the males.
If not more so, because women are the only ones that could produce more human beings.
Right.
Right? Now, the irony, and part of being whiteness, is we tend to be patriarchal. Patriarchal means a society or a community that is dominated by men or by the father. In societies that are matriarchal, it is more egalitarian. Matriarchy is not defined as a society that is ruled by women or the mothers. It is defined as more of an egalitarian society, and herein lies the issue where, if I make it personal, when I was getting divorced, right, from one of my many wives, right, we were dividing up the property. We had a set of 8 dishes. So I said, okay, I'm going to take 4 dishes, 4 cups, 4 saucers, right? And she said, no, I want them all, right? Now, what chance did I have of negotiating? Whereas matriarchy is trying to be equal, and patriarchy is trying to be domineering. What chance does matriarchy have? Especially when patriarchy got a good foot in the door and created the Bible. Am I still on?
Yeah.
Sounds quiet on your end. Okay, good. You know, this is what goes with the whiteness, because the book, the how-to guidebook, which we call the Holy Bible, says
you call
it that.
To book.
Says it's okay to have slaves. Says that the woman is supposed to be subservient to the man. And what man is that? If it's okay to have slaves, and we have already determined that slaves are anybody who is lesser than we are, and we are white, then basically anything, black men are not equal. And this goes back to that survey that I mentioned to you earlier, where white people say, no, I'm not prejudiced, but you give them a test, and, you know, they answer all the questions in the test, and it turns out that they might say they're not prejudiced, but they think black men or people of color are less intelligent than the white man.
Mm-hmm. Or a natural threat. That's the other thing.
A natural threat. Because seldom do you hear a white person talking about a black man without adding adjectives to it. Big black man. There was a big black man. Right. Something big is a threat. You know?
Right.
Or even a black woman. And I watched somebody posted a video on YouTube about a white woman. I think it was at a, I forget what store it was in. It looked like a Target, but I don't think it was a Target. A white woman was ranting for 7 or 8 minutes about how she was discriminated against by two black women. And she's, you know, yelling, and someone else is recording this from a distance, and the person that's recording it is a white woman, right? And we find out, because after this white woman is ranting and raving, she's starting to walk out, and she says, "And I don't know what you think you're recording, lady. I just got discriminated against by two black women, and you being a white woman, you're just sitting there recording. You should be doing something. And why don't you just go home to your husband that's cheating on you, and look at your
wow.
child. He's stealing." You know, and the rage was so pent up. This woman was so full of whiteness. Anyway, as it turned out, she had purchased an item, a large item, and the store clerk had run out of large bags. And the store clerk told her, "Ma'am," the white lady said, "Can you put that in a bag for me?" And the store clerk said, "Ma'am, we're out of bags. Would you like to buy this one for $1? And that's what caused the rant, right?
Wow.
So the lady protested that she was being charged $1 just because she was white, and the clerk called out to her manager, said, "You know, this lady wants a bag. We're out of bags." And the manager yelled, you know, from a distance, probably, I don't know, 20 feet or 30 feet or whatever, and said, "Sorry, ma'am, we're out of bags." Right? And so the white lady is ranting and raving, and she yelled at me from across the room like an animal. "You're an animal! How dare you?"
Wow.
You know, and so the lady's calling 911. The
what?
Ranting woman is calling 911 because she got discriminated against, and they tried to charge her $1 for a bag, you know, and the police didn't even show up.
I guess not. I think that's somebody taking too many pharmaceuticals, man. She's taking too much of the medication.
It could be. Now you're being prejudiced, assuming that all white women are on some kind of pharmaceuticals.
Well,
but that does tend to be the stereotype from the 1950s, right?
Well, a lot of people in this country are on pharmaceuticals. I mean, that's the hard reality. I mean, that's the other thing that this is where it gets all misglado. It's kind of like, this is how my brain works. Like, when I think about covering this story about nuclear pollution, it spills into the chemicals, and then it spills into the pharmaceuticals, it spills into the racism and the social engineering. It's all, the reason, I really firmly believe that the reason that the establishment killed the women's liberation movement was to hold men back and to keep us from becoming a more egalitarian society, because people that are equal and socially and politically informed cannot be controlled. So they shut that down. They brought in the cocaine industry intentionally to destroy the social movements of America, and it's been very effective. And I think the denouement has been Trump being elected. I mean, honestly, I laughed last night when I read that the IRS regularly, full disclosure, my real job is I help people with tax problems. I'm an enrolled agent, so I keep up with tax news. And the IRS normally audits every single president that comes into office. That's just a standard practice. They have a very special place. It's a very secluded, not anybody can get to it, but they do audit the president's tax returns. And they keep it in an orange file. Which I laughed because that little detail I didn't know, you know, like the orange president's tax returns, which he's going to refuse to give in. That's what the story of this conversation was about. He's probably going to change that law so that the president does not get audited anymore. But he keeps it in an orange file. You know, I mean, we're at an impasse in our country where we have to just get real about this is why I wanted us to speak frankly. I can hear many of our listeners, their hair standing up on end, because we're speaking very frankly about whiteness and misogyny in ways, and we're not really beating around the bush. I mean, it's really ridiculous for us to have to be politically correct, because misogyny, racism is not politically correct. I mean, it is not socially correct. It's not going to help humanity make it through the next 50 years when we are coming up against the biggest challenge of our entire history on the world.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, I'm of the philosophy of everything you do, everything we do, should better humanity, right? Generally speaking.
Yeah.
But the attitude of Europeans that came, Europeans that came to this land. Now, I have very little experience with Europeans in Europe, but those who came here, at the risk of sounding like Donald Trump, they didn't send us their good people, right? They sent us the rapists. They sent their greediness. They sent their thieves, as has been evidenced by history, right? I said I was going to avoid my description of Europeans, but I kind of already mentioned three of the adjectives that I used to describe them. But these people didn't come over here to further humanity. They came here to enrich themselves. And this is the problem, whereas the white population, the white European descendants of Europeans here in the United States, not only in the United States, but in the whole of Americas, and you know, a lot of folks, the big insult to minorities is white people telling them to go back where they came from. And for us, the Mexicanos, this is where we came from.
Right.
For the black people, they were forced to come here. So where are they going to go back to? Right? Anyway, but the idea of the descendant of the white European is to better the whiteness, to better the white way of thinking. And when you consider that whites are the minority in the world population, look at all the violence that they have gone through in order to establish themselves as a dominant majority, when they're not even the majority, you know?
Right. Right. Well, it's the attitude. I think it goes back to the royalty, the whole idea. I mean, they still follow the whole thing about the royalty in the European cultures. I mean, it's that whole thing of the tiara, the crown. We're going to pay a few people. They've been blessed by God. That's the thing, is that they bring in this whole religion thing. They think that they have a blessing to be the king, the queen, and they have the right, for example, for Belgium to own major portions of Africa still. England still owns many portions and takes all their assets. I laughed when Trump said he's going to drain the swamp. What he's going to do is drain the coffers. He's not draining the swamp.
Yeah,
I mean, he just appointed a Goldman Sachs guy to run the treasury, for goodness sakes. You know what, Jose, I just realized we have 45 seconds left.
It's a small tweaking of the philosophy of manifest destiny.
That's right.
And they have taught it. We were using the term social engineering, plain and dry. It's brainwashing. And white people are the easiest people to brainwash.
Okay, Jose, I have to interrupt you. We have 15 seconds left. I hope you come back and join us again. We can extend this conversation. Put your courage feet on, you guys. Take some action. And tomorrow I will definitely be giving out Elliot Mainzer's number. We've got to shut down the Columbia Generating Station. Thank you, Jose, for joining us.